Our scripture readings this morning, the first is Psalm 99. The Lord is King, let the peoples tremble. He sits enthroned upon the cherubim, let the earth quake. The Lord is great in Zion, he is exalted over all the peoples. Let them praise your great and awesome name, holy is he. Mighty King, lover of justice, you have established equity. You have executed justice and righteousness in Jacob. Extol the Lord our God, worship at his footstool, holy is he. Moses and Aaron were among his priests. Samuel was also among those who called upon his name. They cried to the Lord, and he answered them. He spoke to them in the pillar of cloud. They kept his decrees and the statutes that he gave them. O Lord our God, you answered them. You were a forgiving God to them, but an avenger of their wrongdoings. Extol the Lord our God and worship at his holy mountain, for the Lord our God is holy. And from Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 through 9, in regard to the transfiguration. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed him, and from the cloud a voice said, This is my son, my beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, Get up and do not be afraid. And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead.
Good morning. As I was leaving for to lead worship this morning from Joliet, my husband kind of peeked up over the book he was reading, and he goes, well, you're kind of sparkly today. And I said, well, it's Transfiguration Sunday. You know, we've got to have a little bling. So this is my attempt at being light. I love the calendars that are usually in the banks in Montana around, what, November, December, that picture typical Montana scenery, especially the ones where the hikers have risen above the tree line to get to that place where you can see as far as the eye can see, the physical eye, seeing the world's physical beauty. Often in the Bible, when we are moving into our spiritual eye, where we can see as much of God as we possibly can, we find ourselves on a hill or on a mountain. For example, in the New Testament, the Gospel of Matthew, the story of the teaching of the Beatitudes. It begins like this. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up to the mountain. And after he sat down, the disciples came to him. They joined him in a high place. And what we begin to understand that what we're going to hear in Scripture is going to be spiritual enlightenment. We are going to move up into our soul where the highest vision of God's holiness can be. Now, in the teaching of the Beatitudes, our soul relishes in such beautiful teachings as you're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and God's way. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are, no more or no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. Or another high enlightened teaching from Jesus is, you're blessed when you get your inside world, your inner landscape, your mind and your heart put right with God. Then you can see God in the outside world. An enlightened teaching from an elevated place. What's another example of an enlightened teaching, a high spiritual place that's delivered to us from the mountain? Do the Ten Commandments come to mind? Well, now we're in the Old Testament, right? We're in Exodus chapter 19 and 20. Following God's saving of the people from their sufferings in Egypt, God shares with the people how they can respond to their God-given new life with gratitude and thanksgiving. And we hear, "You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make idols. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor your father and mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." The people have been invited through the instructions of the Ten Commandments handed to them by Moses to be in a place where their soul has not lived before, where they understand what love of God looks like and then love of neighbor. But it's the story before the commandments that we're interested in this morning. Whom did God talk to and where? In Exodus 19, we read that the people camped in the wilderness in front of Mount Sinai, the mountain, and that Moses went up to God. The Lord called him from the mountain where God spoke all of these words. So, when we read in today's lesson from Matthew 17, verse 1, that Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain. Well, this is a clue that something very important between God and people is about to happen. We are moving up into the highest realm of our soul. And what does Matthew tell us today? First, Matthew tells us that all of the light on the inside of Jesus of Nazareth was made visible on the outside of Jesus to Peter and James and John. All of the light that was on the inside of Jesus was made visible on the outside of Jesus to Peter and James and John. Jesus shone like the sun, we read. And then Matthew goes on to tell us that the three disciples observed Jesus talking to Moses and Elijah. This is presented perhaps as a vision, which is a spiritual reality seen with eyes open, superimposed on a physical reality. Compared to dreams, which are a spiritual reality seen while asleep. The disciples do not clarify whether this is a vision or a dream, but most of us assume we're working with a vision here. What the disciples do tell us is that this religious experience was precious to them. So precious that they wanted to stay with this experience forever. I will make three dwelling places here, Peter tells Jesus, and we'll stay and just be here forever. Well, if you've ever attended church camp, you might be able to connect how the disciples felt in this moment. Church camp is one of the highlights of many a Christian child's summer. Adults and children leave their hometown church and relocate to an outdoor town built and maintained just for this purpose, where they form a compassionate community for 1 week based on the teachings of Jesus. What other kind of community could it be? Now, here in Montana, church camps are usually in the mountains. I think I spy one going up the Bear Tooth in the summer that you might be familiar with. I've never been. I've wanted to drive so bad down that little road and through the gate and see what's in there, but I haven't yet. I have heard from family members. My daughter, Candace, is married to Jason Petty. Their family is active at First Presbyterian, and his younger brother, Sean, played and sung the guitar many, many summers there and tells me all kinds of wonderful stories. He had the same experience everyone else does. You know, you didn't have to make Sean go to church camp. You come to camp, right, and you just know you're going to be loved because loving is what Jesus does. What I observed over the years that at church camp, unlike school, anyone could be a leader because everyone is valued as Jesus taught. So Jesus is encountered at camp through all five senses. Think about it. Meals, songs, silence, Bible lessons, arts and crafts, nature lessons, including hikes and perhaps tubing a river, and campfires complete with what I call holy smoke. And it's not that any campers experience a vision like Peter and James and John, but all the light that was in Jesus becomes more clear at church camp. It is a wonderful religious experience. So at church camp, the most difficult day is the last day when it is time to leave. Most campers want to stay with this religious experience, much like Peter wanted to build dwellings on earth for Jesus and Moses, Elijah. If he could capture them, then everybody could come and see them. Well, at the closing circle, which is usually the tradition of every church camp, tears are normal. The week with the light of Christ to guide us has been powerful, but leave we must. Why? Well, we have family and work and churches and communities who need us, the best us, the enlightened us. And the director of the camp usually says something like this: take your experience of Jesus with you into your own family, your church, your school, and community. Go. It's a benediction. Well, you and I know if we never leave the religious experience that warms our hearts or moves us up into that higher space, if we never leave the worship service or the retreat or the Bible study or the 20 minutes of silence or the yoga class and you fill in the blank, well, what truly has God accomplished in us? Jesus didn't minister from a cave. So in Matthew's story today, God interrupts Peter's speech about building those ridiculous booths with these words: "This is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." This is so refreshing. That's why I love Transfiguration Sunday. We do not get paragraphs of spiritual insight such as the Beatitudes or even 10 bullet points on how to thank God for being generous to us, as in the Ten Commandments, we get 3 words of instruction or 1 bullet point. Just 1. Listen to him. Maybe we're beginning to think we can do this. Listen. So years ago when my husband and I were dating, he told me that he knew I loved him because I listened to him when he talked. He had my undivided attention. "You look at me when I say things," he said kindly. Well, you know, I really hadn't given it much thought, but to this day, it is a definition of love that I cherish. To love someone is to listen to them, to look at them when they are speaking. But there's more. A friend shared with me recently that his 12-year-old is always telling him that he doesn't listen to her. The father will always say to the child, "That's not true. I heard you." However, there is a difference between hearing and listening. Hearing is simply the act of perceiving sound by the ear. It's passive. Yes, the father admits he heard his daughter's voice at the breakfast table as he scrolled through his text messages on his phone and glanced at the national and local news alerts. But did he listen to her request to pick her up early from school because she had a dentist appointment? No, he did not. How did his daughter know? Because he did not show up out in front of the school at 2:15 to pick his daughter up and take her to the appointment. Because the result of listening is action. When God says to the disciples, "Listen to Jesus," what God means is concentrate so that your brain processes meaning from words and sentences, and in our case, the whole life of Christ, so that you learn and act. Listening is a process with more than one step. It is voluntary and it is intentional. So what's beautiful here is that we are designed to listen to God. We are designed for intimacy with God, just like Jesus, and we can reflect God in the world just like Jesus. There is a lot of light inside of us that can be visible to others from the outside. So what does it take to listen to Jesus? What spiritual practice do you engage in so that your brain takes in the words and the person and the life of Jesus so that you begin to act like Jesus? You know, as the author of our psalm that we heard earlier says, we love justice, establish equity, execute justice and righteousness. So what the psalmist is describing is the life of Christ as he brings honor to the dishonorable and heals the sick and forgives the unforgivable. And he says, we, the congregation, we, the people, we do that. That's the fruit of the work of listening to Jesus. Well, now Tuesday is Shrove Tuesday or Fat Tuesday. And you have to understand, I've been a Christian for a long time. And I've learned to chuckle at this because I've discovered that most Christians are really good at indulging themselves in stacks of pancakes on Tuesday, a day originally co-opted by the church to store up enough fat reserves so that we can go skinny by fasting during Lent. Only very few of us ever fast. We just, eat pancakes. Oh, we might stand in line for a little smudging of ashes on our hand or our forehead. But then the next thing you know, we're browsing the aisle of Target and Walmart looking at all of the Easter candy, right? So Lent is upon us. I'm excited. Lent means the days are getting longer. More sunlight is being added to the day. But it's been forever for Christians the season of spiritual practices, of adopting some kind of different behavior which enables us to listen to God without distraction, so that we can be filled with light and let it go on the day of resurrection. What do you do? So, for example, if we were in the monastery, we would see our work day interrupted 3 times to pray. Or as the monks would say, we see that our prayer is interrupted 3 times a day by our work. Monks pray the Psalms every day, all year, and more than one psalm a day. The truth of the Psalms wash over the monks until the monk is set on fire. Extol the Lord our God and worship at his holy mountain, for the Lord our God is holy. And in Psalm 100, for the Lord is good. For the Lord is good, that will wash over them more than once to the year till they live God's goodness. What I want to know today, this is going to be group participation, is how do you listen to God? What is it you do so that your brain can process the life of Christ and then embody the life of Christ? There is wisdom sitting out there in the sanctuary this morning. I know it. There's no wrong. Share with your friends. Just stand up and say, what is it that you have learned is helpful in focusing on the life of Christ? What do you do? So what I hear you saying is that your spiritual awareness in the day-to-day life and the work that you do is present, especially as you watch persons pass from this life to then you're talking to a hospice chaplain. So we've got some similar language here. But you're right. I'm actually reading a book right now about what happens at death. And this person talks about the light that she begins to see that kind of dances across the face of us as we are passing. But it has become a spiritual practice, being present. Thank you. And your name is? Thank you. A spiritual practice. See how ordinary that is? So, what do you do to see God, to listen, to hear? Sandra, yeah. Stand, yeah, if you're able. Right. But you create a space.
Right.
Yeah. What else are you doing? Creating interior silence opens up a well. I like to think of us sometimes as honing devices. That's really what we are. Honing devices. Anyone else? What's going on with you?
Mine is, since my daughter was yet last summer, one of her
fed your soul. I thank you all for sharing. You know, in the church, just like any place else, it's so easy to talk about the weather. And I can chat it up about the weather with the best of them. But how much more interesting would our day be if we talked about what we do to hear God and then stand still to find out what it was that God said? Will you pray with me? Merciful God, transfigured Christ, inspiring Spirit, embolden us, your church, to listen to you, so that what we will choose during the day, during the hour, during the minute, will be your divine life within us, and so that none of us, not one, will perish. Your light, your beauty, truth, and compassion are truly what we long for. Teach us to listen. Amen.